That is the sound of the Waterboys there on KX 93.5, and it's the first choice of our guest today on Full English Breakfast on KX 93.5. So, morning show here on a Sunday. Let me just hit this button here. There you go. That's better, isn't it? Yes. Good morning. It's Sunday here. KX 93.5 is Laguna's only FM radio station. I'm Jason Feddy. And each week on Full English Breakfast, we interview a Brit or somebody from the Sceptred Isle. He was either living here or visiting, and this week we've got a guy that's visiting, and his name is Tom Yelland, and here he is right now. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
How are you, man?
I'm very good. I love the sunshine.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know it's very warm and sunny in Britain at the moment?
No. Not like this, it's not.
No? It's not consistent, is it? That's the thing.
No. Even though we live in the south of England, I mean, you won't be used to, you know, sunny weather up north anyway.
I didn't know what it was when I first arrived, and this big yellow thing in the sky, I was like, what the hell's that?
Yeah.
I was used to, you know, rain pouring. But yeah, it's a different kind of climate. I think people know that the climate's very different down south. Where exactly were you born, sir?
I was born in Winchester, the former capital of England.
Yes.
Down in the south, down to Southampton. Yeah. And then we moved to Bedfordshire.
And you were born as a part of became a very famous group of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I was born as a thalidomide, as we call it in England.
Yeah.
And thalidomide was a drug that was taken by ladies mainly for morning sickness, but it was also given as a relaxant.
It was a kind of sedative, wasn't it? Or yeah. I saw a packet of it online. I saw a picture of a packet, and it said sedative hypnotic.
Yeah.
It's a word that they used.
Yeah.
So it was really kind of a psychotropic drug, really. It was supposed to mellow women out.
Yeah. Chill them out. I mean, it was firstly invented. It was invented in the concentration camps. They tested it firstly in the war. The German pharmacists were looking for a drug that combated gas warfare.
Right. Gassing people, and it was causing convulsions.
Yeah.
And this was something, as you say, it was a sedative, which would calm
people down.
Those fits, as it were, seizures.
And one of the guys, the chemist who invented it, actually first tried it on his wife, and she had a child that was born without any ears.
That's right, I remember.
But he
that.
Didn't put the two together, and they didn't realise that this drug was quite dangerous. For pregnant women.
So they were doing...
It's a wonder drug. I mean, other than, you know, being pregnant, it's an absolutely fantastic drug. But if you're pregnant, it affects the baby, you know, in the womb. And there were 458 babies that were born in England that were deformed in lots of different ways. 3,000 in Germany and all over Europe.
And many more that died before
being
born.
I think they say it's the biggest man-made disaster when it came to... chemicals, and they reckon it's over 100,000 babies that were either deformed so badly that they just died at birth or they were stillborn.
So you were born without arms, I should say, because people can't see you.
Yeah, they can't see how handsome I am.
No, obviously. You're a beautiful man, Tom.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But you were born without arms,
yeah.
And we're going to talk, of course, a lot about that. But other babies were born without feet, and different amounts of limbs
gone.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a really weird group of people, because one could just be a finger missing or deformed thumb.
Right.
All the way down to all four limbs, you know, not being there, and problems internally and brain damage as well, and the whole gambit in between. You know, so it was an incredibly interesting thing, because we're not like everybody else.
No, and as you're speaking to me, it's such an odd thing, because you and I are a similar generation. You're obviously a little older than me, I mean, I have to say.
But although I look a lot younger.
But you were born, what, 61?
62.
All right, so I was born 66. And I remember growing up with thalidomide kids around me, but I never put two and two together that the ones that just had a fist with a thumb, that was still thalidomide, it was still... You know, because it was just not, in those days, in the 70s, it was just not spoken about openly, you know. We'll talk a bit more about that too soon.
Yeah.
Brought you here to play some music, though. And we're going to take breaks. We're going to play music. We're going to talk about Tom. The most important thing about Tom, for to my mind, is he's an artist who makes a living from art, which is just completely unbelievable to me. there's a bunch of artists in town listening right now going, nah, that can't be possible. Please. Arms, no arms. What's the difference? It's impossible to make a living out of art. So we'll talk about that too. Got this next track coming up, Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
It was the first record or the first piece of music that I actually purchased myself. And it was the concert that they had in Central Park. And in fact, last year, my son, who's now 27, said, Dad, I've got tickets to go and see Paul Simon in the Festival Hall in London.
Oh, yeah.
And he took me. And it was just incredible how your brain keeps those words all that time. And we sat, even Joe, because he'd brought up with his dad playing bloody Simon, or sorry, Simon Garfunkel.
It's all right,
all
you can say bloody
years
on the air, you're
oh,
all
you
right.
You can, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's the best drink, isn't it, Bloody Mary, really? So we sat and listened to Paul Simon and just remembered every word, and I just absolutely love it.
Yeah, that just speaks something. Music, it just gets you, doesn't it? It's a different part of the brain.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to hear it right now. It's beautiful.
Turn it up loud.
I will. Bridge Over Troubled Water. Simon and Garfunkel talking to Tom Yelland here, who's an artist from Great Britain. He's here on vacation. Actually, I should mention that you are the second cousin of Laura Buckle. That's how we got together.
I don't normally admit to that.
You don't?
Your time has come to shine.
Well, you know what? If that doesn't get you where it hurts, or, you know, the beautiful pain, of course, I'm talking about of music, I don't know what will. You may be dead. You want to check your pulse, because that is Simon & Garfunkel and Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Live on the air here on KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM, 93.5 megahertz on your FM dial, and kx935.com all over this crazy world. It's your Full English Breakfast here on the radio. I'm Jason Ferry, and talking to Tom. I'm now, let me get this right, Yendel.
Yeah.
Yendel, not Yendel.
You can call me Yendel. My dad would say Jack Yendel.
It sounds posher.
It does, yeah. Japanese computer.
The Yendel.
Yeah.
Very cheap Japanese computer.
Yeah.
Just the one yen. Just the one yen.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking about you because you're an artist and bon viveur, a slayer of dragons.
Yeah. You've met my mother-in-law.
Have you slayed her?
No, not quite yet.
Tom's from the south of England. He was born in the early 60s, a thalidomider.
Yeah.
A man with no, in his particular case, with no arms due to a drug that was given to his mother when she was pregnant. I read somewhere, actually, that they gave, you know, they gave it for morning sickness, but they had this weird, like, Victorian idea that morning sickness was psychosomatic. It wasn't a physical thing. It was just women being hysterical. It's like a different...
Well, it's still there, so the same, aren't they?
What, women?
You've met my mother.
Bit hysterical. Yeah. No, yeah. But you can see what I'm saying, right? They just were giving these things to shut them up.
Oh, yeah. They were just like, they were like sweets, weren't they, in those days? Pills. Yeah. You know, they handed them out and didn't really research. And thalidomide changed the world, of course, because once it happened, you know, the British got on to look at drugs much, you know, much harder way, and didn't just register them when companies, rich companies, said, we want this registered. They, you know, they actually did the research and did it on animals and then on people, and then said,
right,
well,
changed the entire,
right,
changed the system for,
did, yeah,
for making drugs legal.
And interesting, the reason why, you know, it didn't come to America was just because of the there was a new lady in the registration department of the Drugs Administration in America.
Yeah.
And she just decided that she had the job of going through all the forms and the applications for launching new drugs.
Yeah.
And the form came along, it was in German, and she sent it back and said, look, we want it in English. Second form, they sent it back. It was, the handwriting was so bad, so she sent it back again.
Oh, God.
And on the third time, she sent it back for another reason. And over that period of 6 months, it all blew up what was happening in Europe. And the Americans wouldn't have it in the country.
Hmm.
And so she's just died at 101. And,
wow.
She saved a lot of babies.
Her inability to read handwriting has saved a lot of babies. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it was the... Yeah, I think it was the fact that she just wanted... Because she was new at the job... She wanted to do things properly.
Right.
And, I think other people would have just rubber-stamped it and it would have gone through.
It's easy to forget as well that the company that made this drug, as you said before, it was created in... correct me if I'm wrong. It's created in Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
As an anti-nerve gas agent.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on, once war was over, the company that made it was Distillers.
Yeah.
They were actually a booze company.
Yeah, yeah.
They were actually making Seagram's gin and what's the other one? Johnny Walker's a famous thing.
Yeah.
Seagram's not a gin, is it? What is Seagram's? I don't know. Gordon's gin.
Gordon's
I think.
Gin was the...
Right.
Yeah.
So they were just trying to fix their business. They were just trying to do something different.
Yeah.
They were, somebody told me that they were concerned that drugs were the next big thing. Alcohol was going to go by the wayside. So they were finding other things to do to make money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, so you were born in 61, was that 62? And how did that, must have affected your family terribly, because surely your mum took this drug. She probably, I would have thought she would, I don't know, did she blame herself? Were there machinations?
I think,
was it a terrible beginning?
Well, the interesting story about my mum was that she had four children. My brother's the eldest. He's 13 and a half years older than me, and then I've got three sisters, And apparently I'm the baby of the family. And my mum had had the four kids, and then she had a nervous breakdown. And they tried all sorts of things on her. They tried electric shock treatment.
You know, your four brothers and sisters, they're so horrible that they create they gave her a nervous breakdown.
I think it was, especially my brother.
Yeah.
But she went to see the doctor, and the doctor said, look, you know, Mrs. Yendall, we've tried everything for you now. We think the only thing we can think of is that you have another child. And, oh, by the way, here's a pill that will calm you down a bit.
My God.
And I think...
It's the dark ages.
And so I was born. And actually, you know, my dad, especially my father, you know, always worried about what I was going to do in life and how I was going to make a living. But my brother and my sisters, when I was born, I was taken off my mother. I didn't see my mum for about 4 days.
Yeah.
And she was a midwife. She was a nurse, you know, a trained nurse. And
so she knew this wasn't right.
She just couldn't understand why, you know, the nurses wouldn't see me.
Yeah.
And eventually they said that you can go to the baby ward and go and see your son. And she came in, and she was just so afraid that she wasn't going to make that connection with her new baby.
Right.
And the story she tells is how she leant over my cot and she had a scarf around her neck. And I grabbed the scarf with my toes and pulled her down. And she said that that was it. You know, she knew that this was her baby. And actually, the fact I was born without any arms really didn't come into my life. You know, my siblings especially, you know, just took me as another member of the family.
And there's a good story about your older brother, what he said about this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, before I was introduced to the introduced to the family, and my mum... you know, had to tell them that their baby brother had been born without any arms. And my brother, you know, just sort of said, well, it doesn't matter. He won't play cricket for England, but he'll play football for Spurs or soccer for Spurs. And about a week before they were told about me, they'd been to the cinema and looked at one of the newsreels. And there was a clip of a French lady who had no arms and she had two kids, and it just showed her getting on with life. I mean, I don't have a disability in my life. Everything I do with my mouth and my feet and my chin.
Yeah.
And actually, arms are a waste of time, really. I mean, the expense that you armed people have of long sleeves.
You mean like prejudice now?
Yeah.
What do you call
watches? Us?
Like, have you got a name for armed people? Is there like a derogatory term?
And they put you off balance.
They're all wobbly.
Time.
I know.
And you have to buy underarm deodorant.
And your fingers get cold. You have to put them in your pocket.
I know.
It's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
You're right. We're afflicted.
You are.
Except for the arm wrestling. I bet I could beat you at that.
But I can wrestle with other parts of my anatomy.
And I'm not going to... You know, you look like you're a bit handy, actually. Yeah. Not, I don't mean that.
No,
you know.
Footy. Footy.
So, wow, so the family just got on with it, and so did you. That's the thing that's impressive about you. You just sort of shrug your shoulders and go, well, this is because it's how you've always been. But you are working right now with other people who've got, have no use, at least, of their arms and legs. I'm not using the right terminology. Quadriplegics, paraplegics.
Yeah.
People who were able to use their arms and now are not.
Yeah.
In part of your life and part of the work that you do.
Yeah.
And that's presumably a whole nother level, because these people feel that they've lost something. You never felt that you'd lost anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think if you grow up with no arms, or if you grow up with no legs, it's normal. For me, it's a normal thing. I mean, people think it's an amazing thing to be able to have a life with no arms, but it's just normal. And so... all the things I've done in life, and I've actually had a very, very full packed life and done things that most people haven't tried. You know, I'm a qualified scuba diver, I ski, I ride horses, you know, so I'll have a go at anything.
Yeah.
And you don't need your arms to do that.
Right, but that's in your personality, isn't it? That's
about you. Absolutely. And it's down to the individual, isn't it? And whether you've got to get up and go. But also, it's about family and family pushing you in the right direction and saying, you know, have a go at this and have a go at that. My family have always been supported in that way.
Right. And not allowed you to just sort of roll over, if you pardon the expression.
Yeah, no. I mean, by the time I was 27. I'd been off to university and I'd done my arts degree, and I joined a group of artists called the Mouth and Foot Painting Artists, and that's just changed my life, because from up until that point, I think my father was really worried about how I was going to manage financially. But the Mouth and Foot Painters, amazing organisation of, you know, 800 artists in 80 countries around the world,
yeah,
that all generate an income through painting with their mouths and their feet.
Well, as I say, it's a mystery to a lot of artists, able-bodied, with arms or without,
yeah,
I should say, how anybody makes a living at art. So, you know, it's pretty amazing. Let's talk a bit more about that in a minute. I want to play another track. We were going to play one thing, but I've changed my mind.
Okay.
Let's play AC/DC and Back in Black.
Oh, yeah.
All right, here we go.
I hit the sand, I've been to
It is KX 93.5, and that is AC/DC on the radio. Don't get to play AC/DC very much around here. Playing it because Tom Yendall's here from the Sceptre Dial of Great Britain. He's an artist and a thalidomide dude who was born in the early 60s with no arms due to a drug that was given to his parents, or his mother, actually. Your father never took the drug, did he?
No.
He'd still be taking it now.
He worked
too
hard.
Right. Are they still around, your parents?
They are. They're both 95. Yeah.
Goodness me. Good for them.
Yeah. Still plodding on.
Still doing it. Now, when did you get into art, Tom? Because that's really your life's work now. When did you get into that, and how did you discover that you had an aptitude for it, even?
Well, I think I was quite lazy at school, and I wasn't, the most academic of students. But I had a fantastic art teacher, and he really made a big influence on my life, actually. And I think when I was at school, you know, I liked all the drama and music and ceramics and, you know, fabric and did all that sort of stuff. And when I had to decide what I was going to go on to at the age of 17, 18, it was obvious to me that I wanted to go on to do painting. So I went off to do my degree. I did a year foundation to see. Didn't really know what type of artwork I wanted to do. So you do a foundation year, and that really also really didn't tell me what I wanted to do. So I ended up doing a course called Expressive Art.
Right.
Which in the 80s was sort of one of those weird subjects that was just open for people who had no idea whether they wanted to do graphic or illustration or fine art.
Just kind of give something a go. I had friends who went off to do foundation courses. A lot of them didn't, you know, go on any further than that.
Yeah. But I think that I knew that I was going to join the Mouth of Foot Painting artist because we'd known, you know, from the age of 4 years old, I knew about them. They'd been started in 1957. It was a German guy who called Erich Stegmann, who was born able-bodied and at the age of three contracted polio.
Right.
And the story goes that he came from quite a wealthy banking family. And his brothers and sisters would go off to school each day. And because he couldn't use his arms, his mum sort of didn't think that he would go to school. And one occasion he was sitting around the kitchen table with his brothers and sisters, and they were all doing their homework. And he picked up a crayon and wrote Eric with his mouth. And the parents realised not only could he spell, but he could also write. So off he went off to school. And then he realised that he was good at drawing and painting. He went off to university and studied.
Now, amazing. Kids pick up stuff and you've no idea that they're doing it.
Absolutely.
You know?
And, the famous story was of him. He used to go out and paint in the open air. And he would stand with his old painting smock on and an easel. And he'd paint with his paintbrush in his mouth.
Yeah.
And on one day, he used to wear an old trilby hat. And one day, he got really hot summer's day. He got hotter and hotter. And eventually he sort of bent forward and dropped his hat on the floor and carried on painting with his mouth. And then after a couple of minutes, he was suddenly realised that people were putting money in his hat. And he realised that they were giving them the money because of the fact that he was painting by mouth. They weren't giving him the money because of the quality of the image that he was producing. And it struck him that they were just giving him it because they felt he was a charitable case. And
right.
He said that that was so wrong. You know, he said that all his mates from university were earning a living as artists. And he said, it doesn't matter whether you hold your paintbrush in your mouth, your foot, in your hand, or you stick it in another orifice. You know, if you've got a talent, your talent is in your heart and your head, and it will come out onto the canvas. And so he started looking for disabled artists in 1957. He found about 16. And this was just after the Second World War. You know, and he was very lucky to survive.
You know,
they killed a lot of disabled people in Germany in the war. And he pulled this group of 17 artists together and said, look, we want to start a company. We don't want a charity. We want to, you know, stand on our own 2 feet or our own 4 wheels.
Yeah.
And we want to produce art that can be produced on cards and calendars and wrapping paper and books. And we'll sell that to the public, and the money that comes back will be divided by the artists. And so he started in a very small way, And he died, Stegman died in 1984, but the association now is going on. We're on to our 60th year this year. And yeah, we have 800 artists in 80 countries.
I was going to ask if it's an international organisation. So I was going to, that one of my questions was, does it irritate you that people find your story inspiring and, it, you know, you want to be, surely you want the art to be judged on its own merits?
No, because I think that we're all put on the planet for a reason. We're put on Earth for a reason. And I think I've always said that, you know, if I can inspire somebody to do get off their bum and do something with their life, whether it's having a go at scuba diving or whether it's riding a horse or painting or doing anything, the things that you can do, I know you can do, you know, that's important. And I think that the thing that really annoys me, especially back at home, are the one people that just sit and watch daytime TV and don't do anything with their lives, you know. Life is very short, you know, and as you know, now that you're 65, that, you know, it gets quicker and quicker. And you know, time runs out very quickly.
Listen, you know what? You've got no arms. Don't think I won't come over there.
That's all right. It's best offer I'm going to have all day.
But it's the people that sit on the right.
Yeah, it's the people that just sit there and do nothing with their lives. You know, it's such a waste. You know, the world is amazing. And whether it's here or in Ghana, where I go to a lot in Africa, or to Australia and see my brother, you know, you should be getting out and doing things.
Yeah. It's a recipe for depression anyway, just sitting around doing nothing. That's, you know.
We have a thing called Jeremy Kyle in England.
Yeah. What's his name, the guy here?
Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I've always said that if I had, watching Jerry Springer, if I'd had wrists, I would have cut them by now.
Right, if that's what you're doing all day, just sitting watching.
Just sitting with Jerry,
people scream at each other.
There's so much more, isn't there? I mean, I went down on the beach here yesterday and had a swim. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I mean, it's just a beautiful place to live. And the art, it's just mind-blowing. I don't think we have anywhere like this in England.
Well, this, you know, it started out as an artist colony. Artists got together because they felt that they could support each other and create exhibitions. I mean, the Pageant of the Master started, you know, people standing on the beach pretending to be works of art, you know, and that's how it started. So I was thinking about your group and just sort of philosophically, as you say, you want to be judged on the work itself, but on the other hand, why not? You know, people get together as Christian art groups and French art groups and groups of, you know, like-minded or like-bodied people doing all kinds of things in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, me, I'm a thinker, so I'm a lunatic. I need to square it away in my head. But it makes absolute sense that groups of people who, you know, have a similar lifestyle or similar challenges would get together and help each other in business. I think it's an incredible thing. How do you feel about, like, being held up as some kind of standard, you know, as an inspiration? Does it get on your nerves ever?
No, I don't think so. I think that it's how you look at people. I mean, I think we have artists that are much more inspirational. You know, I think the guys that have broken their neck, young 19-year-old guy, you know, who's got the world and his life in front of him, mm-hmm. dives into too shallow water and breaks his neck, mm-hmm. and goes from that active bronze, blue-eyed, you know, surfer to somebody who can just turn his head left and right.
Yeah.
And then they find art, and then they get a career, and they earn a living, and they can afford to have their own house and have their own vehicle, and you know, and that's what's it. You know, to me, that's much more inspiration. You were mentioning earlier about the fact that I don't see myself having a disability because I've had it all my life. Whereas looking at guys, young guys that have been totally able-bodied and then can only move their head, but they've got off. And started a career, and you know, that is
really
amazing.
Is incredible and incredibly inspiring. Yeah,
it is.
And they're smiling. I was watching videos when I was thinking about you yesterday, watching videos. This guy called, what's his name? Bazza.
Oh, Barry West is quite an amazing young man.
Yeah.
And last year, he's a good friend of mine back in England. And last year, he was in hospital for 9 months of the year. A lot of our, we lose a lot of our artists because, their disabilities mean that they get really bad chest infections and things like that. But he'd just become a dad. And his mum fell down the stairs and broke both her wrists. His wife had their new baby. And then a week later, he ended up in hospital for 9 months. And he's come out the other side now. He got married. And he could just move his head. He swerved to miss a badger. Do you have badgers over here?
It's just a little animal. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
And he swerved in his car. Swerved in his car to miss a badger and hit a tree and broke his neck.
And his life had changed. He was 18 years old or 19 years old.
And he jumps out of aeroplanes, he scuba dives, he can't feel anything from his neck down, and that's quite amazing, really. And he loves his art.
He does love his art and a good sense of humour too. That's a British thing though too, I think. But really, I was inspired by him. And it also, I'll tell you what else, and this may or may not be a good thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. It made me think, Jason, what are you complaining about, dude?
Yeah.
How are you complaining about in your life?
Yeah.
Get off the couch.
If you haven't done something new every day of the week, then you haven't got a proper life, have you?
Yeah.
You know, my motto is in life, try everything. And my biography that's been written, I wanted to call it In Life, Try Everything, but my wife, Lucy, wouldn't let me because she said it sounded as though I took drugs and things. So it's called Here for a Purpose.
Where can people get the book?
I don't think you can get it here. I mean, maybe the American publisher needs to have it online over here. I mean, we've got a good website.
We'll go to your website.
MFPAUSA.com.
MFPAUSA.com.
It's the American site,
that's good. That's good to know. I want to play a quick song because we've got to get to the last song.
Yeah.
Right. Let's do this. Let's find the shortest song. Here we go. Look, very British. You're not the first to choose this song on this show, but it just keeps coming around.
It's predictable.
Maybe it's predictable. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with predictable. I think that's fine. But it certainly comes around, and it's certainly one of those tunes that's, I'll leave people to judge. It's The Proms. I've picked it from The Proms. It's Jerusalem.
My favourite hymn.
And mine too. Yeah. Classic, Jerusalem. And the great thing about this recording of it is you can hear the crowd singing it. Brilliant. And they're loving it. There's something very patriotic about it in a good way.
Yeah.
Here we go. I'm telling you, I feel every time I play that, I feel like we should be standing up and saluting and thinking about Her Majesty the Queen, HM the Q. Do you fancy the Queen, Tom?
I think she's an amazing woman.
You're not answering the question, though. Do you fancy her? That's the question.
She's a bit old for me. If you watch The Crown, I fancy her when she was in The Crown.
Right, the younger model.
The younger version.
I'd like the younger model, I'll take the younger model. Hey, I should say that we are sponsored here by the British Hair Company. Let me play a thing.
British Hair Company?
Yeah, well, there's a company in town called the British Hair Company. They're very nice people, and they're very, very British. Paul and Tracy.
Oh, really?
Are they from Croydon or somewhere?
London.
Where are they from? London somewhere, yeah. Here, let me play this, because I haven't played it yet, and they pay for us to play it, so here we go.
Napoleon. Are you coming to bed?
Not tonight, Josephine. I have an headache. What is that infernal racket?
The British are coming! The British are coming!
Put down your hairdryers and surrender in the name of the British Empire.
The British Hair Company has now relocated to 750 South Coast Highway and taken over management of Paris Salon. The British Hair Company. Passion, energy and excellence through education. 949-497-8345.
God save the Queen!
Yes, God save the Queen and all who's sailing her, absolutely. British Hair Company, very good. They do my hair, you know. But they do yours.
That's not a good advert.
Laura Buckles, it was just so quick. Grab that one because it's got a thing on it. There you go. Hang on a minute. Are you there?
Hello, yes.
Hello. Laura Buckles here. When's your show, Laura?
My show is Friday, 7 till 9, Smashed. And then I do the School's Out show on a Wednesday. But School's Out right now, so that's not kicking back.
So School's
until
Out
September.
Is out at the moment.
School's Out is out. It's right. Kicking up in September.
Back in September when when the kids are here. Yeah. And that's cool because you do stuff in the community and you're linked to the kids in the schools. And that's part of our mission statement here at KX93.5. Tom Yendall is here. He's an artist from Britain. How long are you in the country for, Tom?
Oh, only till Tuesday now.
Really? And that's it?
Yeah,
going back
that's
to Britain.
It. Back to do some work, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you have made a life for yourself making art and thinking about what art would sell and how to do it rather than being the kind of, you know, wanker like me who's some sort of self-expression and wasted his life. But you are actually seriously making art and your art's been used for cards and wrapping paper and that kind of thing. You know, it's in the world. So you can find Tom's work. What's the website? Your website?
My website is Tom Yendall, and my surname is YENDELL.
Right.
.co.uk.
Right.
Or MFPAUSA.com.
MFPAUSA.com. That's the Mouth and Foot Painters Association. I'd love to know more. We haven't got much time, and I want to hear this story about Gracie Fields. What's fascinating is that, you know, you just made it your own life, and it's just lovely to meet you, man. And the thing about, like, painting with your mouth, in the end, it's just a question of dexterity and practice.
Yeah,
if you've got the gene that means that you can translate what you see in your head onto the page. So, you know, fingers, mouth. Incredible video of Tom online painting with a credit card.
Yeah, that's my new thing. I'm really enjoying that.
And the batik thing that you do, and
silk paintings.
Some of your work looks like those Hindu, what do they call those things? Mandala paintings, like meditational aids. Quite geometric.
Yeah, I like I like shape and color and line.
Yeah, yeah. So the work's available online. You can find Tom online. Tell us about Gracie Fields, mate.
Well, it's a good one to go out with because this is the two tunes that you've played Jerusalem, which not only did I have at my wedding, but I also am going to have at my funeral. And we had a fantastic comedian in England called Dave Allen, and they've just played all his old shows.
Is he a Welsh guy?
He was Irish.
Irish?
Irish.
Right. Did he have a glass of whiskey in his hand?
Yeah.
The whole time? Yeah, I remember.
And a smoked.
Yeah.
And they just played all these old things, and a lot of them are about funerals. And it just got me thinking about my funeral. And wish me luck and wave me goodbye is a term that I wish, at my funeral I'm going to have. So this is the song I'm going to go out on.
Well, I'm hoping that that's, you know, a few years away yet.
Not too many. I don't want to be around.
You had enough?
Well, I don't want to be around too long. I've had a good life, and I've enjoyed my life, and I don't want to go downhill.
Good for you. Well, it's really a pleasure to meet you, mate, and I'm excited that you've come to our town, and I hope you get to see the festivals and meet other artists. And thanks for coming in. It's really no tremendous problem. Thing. All right, Tom Yendall here on KX93.5. This has been your full English breakfast.
Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. Cheerio, here I go on my way. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. Not a tear, but a cheer, make it gay. Give me a smile I can keep all the while.
Not tonight, Josephine. I have an headache. What is that infernal racket?
The British are coming! The British are coming!
Put down your hairdryers and surrender in the name of the British Empire!
The British Hair Company has now relocated to 750 South Coast Highway and taken over management of Paris Salon. The British Hair Company. Passion, energy and excellence through education. 949-497-8345.
God save the Queen!
KXRN LP, Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX 93.5.